Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan MacLeod. Now, I'm on a call today to Gerrit Smit. He's a fund manager at Stonehage Fleming, a London-based global wealth management company that invests on behalf of ultra-wealthy individuals. Gerrit is South African, as you can tell by his name, but based in London. Gerrit, welcome to the podcast. First of all, we're chatting to you today because despite the massive run-up in global tech stocks in recent years, you believe that the market hasn't become overheated and that in fact tech has a sustainable growth path ahead of it. You look after a fund called the GBI Fund and you have a significant weighting towards tech in that fund. Tell us a bit about the fund and why you're so bullish on tech despite tech shares, particularly in the US and China, performing so strongly in recent years.
The fund's mandate is a global quality equity mandate. And in that, we have a 30% exposure in technology. And clearly, we express high conviction on those technology businesses in our portfolio. The philosophy behind the mandate is one of sustainable growth at attractive valuations. So by implication, we have that conviction on those technology businesses. The context of the question often is in the against the background of the technology bubble of the turn of the century. And I really think we have a very different scenario at the moment where then it was more about internet and the blue sky in terms of future growth that the market saw at that stage, where at the moment we see these companies delivering really well in terms of earnings and free cash flow that is being delivered right now because of all these technology changes, and clearly a lot of that is to do with big data and also with social media. And clearly the conviction is that it is sustainable at the moment, and that these particular companies that we own have the ability to, apart from becoming even more global, that they can continue growing at double-digit rates for the foreseeable future, and that growth is projected in free cash flow, not in proverbial earnings per share. And for us, the ability to deliver free cash flow, which in many cases gets through to shareholders in the form of dividends, is the crucial factor why one should be invested in these companies.
What are some of the is there a particular focus area in the tech space that has you excited? I know that you're doing the dot-com bubble. It was all about internet stocks. Is it still the big internet companies that have you excited, or is there another area of the technology field that you think is poised for the sort of robust long-term growth?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that themes in the technology companies that we cover are predominantly social media, and the benefits of that in a number of different aspects. Then also in terms of electronic payment systems, where there's clearly a long structural growth theme away from, call it, from cash payments to electronic payments. And then a very interesting one also on consulting, mm-hmm. where a lot is happening in technology experts assisting businesses to get themselves and their clients into the technology of the future. And clearly, by implication, they're becoming very technology-related themselves.
Right.
So those are what I would call the main themes in technology.
Okay. And do you invest in companies of a particular size? I mean, do you have any exposure to tech startups, or do you invest more in established businesses?
Yeah. No, that's a very, very important point. You may have picked up my emphasis on free cash flow.
Yes.
So, obviously, that is all that the shareholder can really claim from a business, usually in the form of a dividend. But because of that emphasis, we buy mostly well-established businesses that in many cases are quite global with their services. And if not global, they have the ability to go more global.
Okay.
But I'm clearly emphasizing the issue of we buying current profitability rather than just potential future profitability.
Right. So what are some of the big companies you're invested in and are particularly bullish about?
If we go along with the themes, in payment, we own both Visa and PayPal. And the latter one is more a recent purchase.
Okay.
But it's all really doing very well. Visa is clearly the world's largest payment system business. And contrary to many perceptions, it is not a financial services organization. It is purely a technology facilitator,
right,
of electronic transactions between the vendor and the bank. And the structural growth potential in that is enormous, as we all know. There's obviously different technologies in payment systems, and PayPal has made a lot of progress in more online top of payment systems, and we don't think we have to make a choice between two of those. We have the conviction to own both, and there are more very, very high quality payment system businesses. But we believe we've got two of the best.
Okay. So what about internet and social media shares? What do you favor in that space?
We do own Tencent, and obviously a lot of their work is on the internet, and although they're not in pure internet business, so we rather invest for the use of the platform and the benefits that can bring to the business and its clients. But we all know to what degree they've been able to grow the electronic game business in China and now actually going even more global, purely on internet, and moving obviously very much at a rapid pace also onto mobile. So that is a very strong profit driver for them. Along with that, clearly WeChat has become a fantastic growth avenue for them in very different avenues of different top of businesses that one can do on that platform. So clearly they're very well diversified, having started clearly on the internet.
Tencent has run up very, very, very strongly over the last year. How much upside do you think is still in this company? I mean, are we not at the current levels, the current valuations, are investors not pricing in earnings growth well into the future already, or do you think there's still a lot of upside in the share?
You're right. The company has done exceedingly well. And the big question is how much they can grow on this high base they are. Two points to make in that context. On the simple one of electronic games, clearly that has become what many now use the phrase e-sport for. And while it is extremely popular in large parts of Asia, it is just starting to become more popular in the so-called West. And they have bought a number of outstanding game developer businesses in the West. So I think there's still more growth potential in that. And then in WeChat, we probably all can't say surprised, but we're well impressed with the results that they get on WeChat. And although they have had a lot of progress on the different type of services that one can access through WeChat, clearly they're not in the last phase of developing those different accesses. And the use of that can obviously still grow from there.
Mm.
So it's difficult to make precise projections, but we've just taken the call it the consensus projections of all the analysts that we know of, and if one takes those 3-year compounded growth number and you divide that into the traditional PE ratio, you get what we call a PEG ratio, the price earnings to growth ratio of about 1.8, where the average on most portfolios is rather closer to 2.4.
Okay.
So if those analysts have it right, and I haven't got reason to doubt that, there may be more left in Tencent.
I was going to ask what the right right measures are to consider investments in these sort of companies. You mentioned PE ratios and PEG ratios, and you mentioned earlier in this discussion that you look at free cash flow generation. What are some of the, I mean, the PE ratio is probably the most well-known means of determining whether a company is fairly valued or not. But looking at these high-growth internet stocks, which are the important metrics you think investors and shareholders should be looking at?
Yeah, that's a very difficult one. We are a bit more conservative and wouldn't rely only on one. So because so many are focusing on the PE ratio, one can't ignore that, because that is what the market does. But for me, the focus has to be on the free cash flow yield and the implied free cash flow peg ratio, where one thinks the free cash flow is going.
Mm-hmm.
And a combination of those can give one some guidance, but clearly we all know we can't be an exact science. But what I really would warn against in terms of considering technology companies is actually to also be very cognizant of to what degree the company succeeds in driving or growing the top line, because if they don't get double-digit growth in the top line,
mm-hmm.
that may imply that the technology is slowly starting to fall out of favor, and then clearly the earnings multiples or the valuation multiples will start dropping.
Okay.
So along with those valuation metrics, one has to focus very much on the top-line growth. And as you may be very aware, 10 cents top line growth in the past reporting, I think it was about 3 months ago, though they announced more than 50% growth
mm-hmm.
in the top line, which is phenomenal for a company that's now, in terms of market value, the world's eighth largest company.
Yes, yeah, incredible growth. Before we move on from Tencent, obviously related to that is the subject of NASPERS. Now, there's been a lot of debate in the last few months about the discount that NASPERS trades at relative to the value of its stake in Tencent and its other assets such as MultiChoice, etc., are completely discounted. In fact, it has an implied negative value for its other assets. What is your take on NASPERS's valuation? Are you invested in it at all? Do you think there's an opportunity there for people wanting to get exposure to Chinese internet stocks? What is your take on the NASPERS valuation?
I think there's nothing strange really in the valuation. I mean, clearly, NASPERS is a holding company of a number of businesses, and there is usually quite a discount on the holding companies. And NASPERS's discount is probably a bit larger than average at the moment. But just making the point, even JSE-listed holding companies are trading at large discounts. The first point.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is we while they in the phase of investing to grow their e-commerce, clearly one can't expect them to produce particularly good results because they are in a phase of heavy investing. That has been going for a while. And the question is only whether that has run most of the process or not. If it has run most of the process, one is probably getting closer to the stage where the discount will start reducing. And with the uncertainty that the market has about that, clearly they live from earnings report to earnings report is to see how that evolves.
Mm.
We don't see enough of all, there's not enough commentary about all the businesses that they have built and the infrastructure that they have in, particularly in the emerging world e-commerce market. And when that turns for the positive, whether with potential corporate actions or not, that may have a profound positive effect on the discount and the share price.
Mm-hmm. Is it a share that you'd be interested in buying then? Or do you own shares, first of all, in Naspers, and do you think it's an investment opportunity right now?
I think the share is getting on the global investment radar a lot more because of the publicity around the success of Tencent, clearly, and also more recently because of the discount. And I can see that more global investors and even others than just emerging market investors will seriously consider it.
Okay. Are there any other South African technology stocks that appeal to you or that you are invested in?
I'm not aware of any other material South African technology businesses. And clearly our mandate is a global one.
Okay.
So we are looking for more global businesses. And clearly Naspers is a strong candidate for that.
Okay. I'd be keen to get your views then on some of the big tech stocks in the United States. Let's talk about Apple first. They've just announced new iPhones. The suggestions that maybe the iPhone 8 models haven't exactly had a sparkling reception so far from consumers. Is this a worry given how much Apple relies on the iPhone? And, you know, some people have suggested that Apple has become a bit of a one-trick pony and that one stumble with the iPhone could prove disastrous for the stock. What's your take on Apple?
Yeah, that's a very fair question. I think fortunately, we are now at the iPhone 8 already. So that point is becoming, with water under the bridge, less and less of an issue. Obviously what I mean with that is the other part of the business is more on the services and the software side, which is clearly doing outstandingly well, is becoming more of an earnings driver than what it has been before. I do think it's a bit early to say that the iPhone 8 is not going to have the reception that they used to. Clearly, they offer the, call it the older models, also at lower prices still. So I think it's more than just the iPhone 8 or the iPhone 10 that has also been launched.
Yes.
And I would not call it a one-trick pony. A few years ago, it could have been. They've proven themselves to not be, and I won't be willing to give them that label now. Yeah.
Okay. So you think that they're making progress in diversifying their revenue mix, especially when it comes to services, and that this is going to be a future pillar of growth for the company. Okay. I wanted to get your thoughts then on two other major Silicon Valley companies, Google and Facebook. Is online advertising really big enough to justify the lofty valuations that these companies have attracted?
Obviously that industry is far further down the road than what electronic payments are.
Okay.
But still, there's still a lot of advertising revenues that have to go from print and outdoor and all of that and radio and also TV to call it into to online. So I still think it's a structural growth industry in terms of Facebook and Google. So That's the point on advertisements. And then in terms of Google, clearly they have been very astute in the development of both Android and also YouTube. And although we don't talk that much about those businesses, but they themselves, apart from advertisements, have become profit drivers. And we already see that competition commissions are looking into Android, which, as you surely would be aware, runs on more than three quarters of the world's smartphones.
Yes.
So you can imagine what growth avenue that still can bring them. And the same for YouTube, that can become a global broadcaster of programs and other materials.
Okay, so bullish on both of those. Wanted to get your thoughts on Microsoft and Amazon, the two biggest players in the cloud computing market. I'm particularly interested in Microsoft because every 10 years or so, they seem to have to go through a major change in their business model. Certainly at first glance, it appears that they are being successful at transitioning into the cloud computing era. But what are your thoughts on the company? The share price has run up quite strongly over the last few years. Is Microsoft managing this next major transition in its business?
A very, very fair point. We can give both Microsoft and Amazon credit for having had the foresight early enough to invest material capacity in the cloud. So they're reaping those benefits. The question clearly can also become when it may become a crowded market, but we don't think we're there yet. In terms of Microsoft, I think what has been equally important for them was the switch to a subscription model rather than a once-off payment for a particular piece of software.
Yes.
So, obviously, with a subscription model, they have a more equal and hopefully a longer stream of payments that are contracted. And for me as a long-term investor, that is actually maybe even more important than just the windfall that they have on cloud at the moment.
Okay. Adobe, of course, is another company that's done very well in that space. I'm just having a look at their share price here in Google Finance, and they've got a market cap now of $72 billion. Their share price has risen by 330% in the last 5 years. So some companies have proved hugely successful at software as a service and the cloud computing model.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an incredible story. And clearly, the same applies for them, where they have quite recently, I think it's probably a year or so ago, started to offer their services through a subscription model. And now suddenly have so many more clients subscribing to their services, and those clients also benefiting from being in the cloud and all of those.
Yes.
One has to be careful to try to call the top of all these benefits, but at the moment, I think we're in the first half of that of those benefits of the subscription models, not in the latter half.
Okay. Before we wrap up, Gerard, I just wanted to get your views on another Silicon Valley company that has maybe tenuous ties to South Africa, and that's Tesla. That has an incredible valuation. I think it was just a few months ago that Tesla's market value went past BMW, rather. What is your view of Tesla? Are you invested in Tesla at all? Do you think that? What do you think of the current valuation of that business?
Tech Titan, it's a more difficult one to have a conviction on, we probably all realize. As you may have gathered from our approach and philosophy on investing for free cash flow generation, Tesla is not there yet. They're in a very early phase of investing, and they're actually very cash hungry, and they have to come to the market within the forms of debt or share issuance reasonably frequently. So on that basis, despite the fact that it is in a really good business, it doesn't comply with our philosophy for investing for free cash flow generation.
Okay. Gerrit, just lastly, as we wrap up, I don't know if you can disclose this, but let me ask it anyway. What are your three biggest tech investments?
They are Visa and Tencent.
Visa, Tencent, and the third one?
Accenture,
okay. Okay, that's an interesting one. You mentioned consulting services, so just to talk us through Accenture, why you have a big exposure to that business?
Yeah, Accenture is the one where I've made the point where their consultants help clients into technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually more of an technology-related business than purely a business consulting business. So they do a lot of work at the moment on assisting clients into the cloud or getting them well-suited or prepared for cybersecurity type of issues or just digital developments. And from those, you can gather that they both technology related and just normal business consulting related.
Okay. Gerrit Smit is fund manager at Stonehage Fleming. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today. This has been a great discussion.